Wow, what a gorgeous time to be riding on the Gulf Coast. I've been all over on my bike today and I've got more riding to do. I'd like to invite you to watch my new TV show, The Biker Dad Show, Sundays at 9 o'clock on MyTV 35. Even if you don't ride, you'll get a kick out of the stories that we tell. This week on Biker Dad, the inspiring story of Rick Fairless, legendary bike builder, how he left a top-paying corporate job to chase motorcycles, peace, love, and happiness. I think you'll be inspired by this story, too. Bikers are bucking the COVID cancel culture here on the Gulf Coast, planning a freedom ride and rally October 9th in Orange Beach, partly in response to the cancellation of Shrimp Fest. Please put October 30th on your calendar. My friend has breast cancer, and we are putting on the Halloween ride for Christina's boobies. It starts at Cottonmouth Customs on October 30th. And again, please watch The Biker Dad Show Sundays at 9 o'clock on MyTV 35 and hit subscribe on our YouTube channel.
And we are joined by legendary bike builder Rick Fairless in Dallas, Texas, where he has his shop and everything else. And thanks for joining us, Rick. And you got some big stuff going on in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, we are actually having our 25th anniversary party and the Rick turned 65 party. So we're expecting a big blowout. We're bringing in a band called Warrant. You old timers will remember Warrant from the 90s. One of their big hits was Cherry Pie, She's My Cherry Pie, and Uncle Tom's Cabin, and a bunch of stuff. So they the lead singer is a friend of mine, and I talked him into coming out here by writing a big check. So we're looking forward to it.
Well, that's awesome. I'm a big fan of Warrant. Heaven is actually my favorite song by them.
Yeah, that's a good one, too.
So I've people been living under a rock for the last 25 years, don't know who you are. Most of my audience is going to know who you are, but just to tell everybody a little bit about yourself. You have an awesome background story.
Well, I worked for, a company called, the Glidden Paint Company for 20 years. And, you know, my whole life I've ridden motorcycles. I started riding when I was 7 years old and my brother and I are 11 months apart. There's 1 month a year that we're the same age. This one in September, we're the same age. And so he and I, you know, we've been best friends our whole lives. He's one of the top attorneys in the country and he's in Houston. And so he's always been my riding buddy and my getting in trouble buddy and my get Rick out of trouble buddy. And so we learned to ride motorcycles together. And I've always had one. So the whole time I worked for Glidden, I started there when I was 19 and I worked my way up to, I was the number one sales rep in the country. So I was making a good living working for Glidden and raising my kids. And I liked it, but I always knew there was more there somewhere, you know, and it's like, man, it would be cool to have a custom shop in Dallas, you know, because I was always riding my Harley and all my buddies had Harleys and we'd all hang out. We'd talk about what would be the perfect shop and man, it'd be cool to have a bar and all these different things. And I just kept thinking, why can't somebody open a custom shop in Dallas? Why can't somebody do one in? Then it was like somebody hit me in the head and I thought, why can't that guy be me? Why can't that guy be me? And I thought, I can't do it. I'm just a, you know, I'm a working guy and you know, I've got this job and these kids. And then I thought, well, you got 20 years coming up. Well, you could actually retire. Okay. What about the kids? Well, you can draw on your 401k and get the money to open a shop. And I thought, well, you know what? I'll check into it. I'll just kind of, and I just knew that there was no way I could do one. And, I don't know. I just kept toying with it. And I just kept putting stuff on paper and trying to figure things out. And I just wasn't, the more I worked on it, the more roadblocks I hit. And every time I hit a roadblock, I went over it or under it or through it, or, you know, there was always something that was getting in the way. And so I really never thought that it would happen. I really never thought that it would happen, but I made it happen. And nobody was more surprised than me that I made it happen. The thing that I always knew was I could always go back to work for Glidden or Jones Blair or Sherwin-Williams or, you know, any of the big paint companies. I could always get a job there because I had a really good reputation. And as hard as I work in the motorcycle business, well, I worked that hard in the paint business too. So I had that cushion of knowing that I could always replace, you know, I could go crawling back to Glidden if I had to. So luckily I hadn't had to go crawling back to Glidden yet.
Well, that's a great story for me to hear because I'm going through something similar right now. I've been a television news executive for 25 years and in May I left my job to do this for a living.
Right.
And it's another thing where you think, oh, I don't know if I could, I've been thinking about it for 7 years. I don't know if I could really do that, but it's only taken me 4 months to get advertising revenue that matched my salary. So it's pretty awesome. I'm just glad to hear. What advice do you have for somebody like me who's just decided to throw away everything and follow their dream, kind of like you did?
Don't give up on it. When things get tough, don't give up on it. You know, I mean, there's always, to me, and I do actually do some motivational speaking. I've lectured out at TCU 3 times, and actually I'm supposed to lecture at TCU again. I've lectured at DePaul University. I've lectured for some different companies. And to me, you can do whatever you want to do if you want to do it bad enough. You know, so if you'd like to do something, yeah, it'd be kind of cool, and I'm going to, you know, well, if you throw yourself into it, if you make the commitment that Chris says, I want to do this and I'm going to leave my job and I'm going to work on this, throw everything you have at it and see if you're putting in that amount of work. And, you know, because sometimes you may think you want to do something and then you start doing it and you think, you know, it's not what I thought it would be. But if it is what you thought it would be and that's what somebody wants to do, man, give it everything you have, because working for yourself is so much better than working for somebody else. I mean, you don't have that cushion of, you know, of having a boss that, you know, is going to make the payroll and going to pay the mortgage and all that stuff. But if you believe in yourself, then try it. You'll be so much happier.
Yeah, I've been shocked about how successful my venture has been already, and it's the same thing. I'm pretty relentless about everything I do, so yeah. Being relentless about it's a big part of it. And it's also a little different, like for me, it's, well, for you then too, but at least some people have bosses like you where it's not a corporate thing, and I think that you think of corporate security from your paycheck, but there's really always some guy in a gray suit and a white shirt and a boring tie deciding what your future is going to be, or if you even get to be paid anymore. So this is definitely a lot more fulfilling. That's kind of the business side of it, but there's an art to what you do too. You have a very unique style. How did that come about?
You know, I mean, it's I like different things. I mean, my philosophy has always been, if people are going to go and everybody's going and everybody's turning right, I'm going to turn to the left. I'm going to do, well, everybody else starts going to the, then I'm going to go, you know, I always want to do something different. And the motorcycle deal was pretty easy because that's where my passion is. And, you know, people will say, where do you come up with these crazy ideas and all those things? That's the easy part. That's the easy part for me. I got millions of ideas of different things I want to do, you know, but if at the end of the day, a motorcycle has to be functional. You know, it doesn't do any good. And there's builders out there that build bikes and I've got a couple of them in here now that, you know, they want us to turn them into functional motorcycles. I can. You're going to write me a big check, probably bigger than if I built it from scratch. Well, I don't want to, you know, one guy was bought this radical looking bike, brought it to me. And he said, I just bought it. I want to be able to ride it. And I said, we're going to get it started. And I'm probably going to call you and tell you that it's not rideable without doing a bunch of major modifications that I have no desire to do. I don't want to come in behind somebody. And and that's what we did. We got it running. My guy said, boss, I'm going to ride it in the parking lot. And I said, you better be careful because that rake and trail is so far off. And he got it up to 20 miles an hour. And he didn't think he was going to get it stopped because of the front end. And I told the guy, and the guy said, well, what about this? And what about this? And what about this? And I said, that's a patch job. I'm not interested in doing that. I don't want the liability of doing that, you know? So the bike looks great sitting there. Or some of the guys you've seen on TV, they'll build a bike and it will look good going down the road, but it's not meant for you to get on it and go riding with your wife or your buddies or something. It's meant to be a showpiece. I have no desire to do that. I don't want to do that. That's not us, you know, the stuff that we build has to be functional, or else it's not really a motorcycle, you know? And I want my stuff to be art, but I want it to be functional. I want it to be rolling art. I want you to be able to ride it, you know? So that's the whole thing. And the whole tie-dye thing, you know, one girl told me 10 years ago, she was a marketing lady, and she said, you're a pretty good marketer, Rick. And I said, thank you. And she said, the whole long hair and tie-dye and Chuck Taylors and that whole peace and love and hippie thing you got going, that was brilliant. And I said, that ain't marketing, lady. That's just who I am. That's what I believe. I can't be something that I'm not, you know. It's like my friend Russell Mitchell. Well, he builds these black bikes and he sands down the cases and makes everything. And I love that look, but it's not me. I can't do that. You know, could I do one to do it? Yeah. And I've done one that I'm actually redoing it now that I could do. And I like it, but you know, could he do a peace and love psychedelic bike like mine? Yeah. Russell Mitchell could do one. But that's not who he is, and he don't want to do it, and that's not who I am, and I don't want to do what he does.
Yeah, authenticity is really important, especially with bikers, and that's one of my main things too, is just to be who you are and not what you're not. I'm not a mechanic. I suck at building and fixing bikes, and I'm not a Hell's Angels badass either. I'm just a nerd on a motorcycle and likes to talk to other people who like motorcycles.
And what kind of motorcycle do you ride, Chris?
I just have a stock Harley Davidson Street Bob.
Okay.
I've got custom paint on it and some bags and stuff. But other than that, right, to your point, it's rideable. That's the main thing to me, is I can get on that. And even though it's a smaller bike, I can still get on it and ride all the way to Seattle from Alabama if I want to. And have no problems with it. And, some people don't want to ride a Street Bob on long trips, but I've had no issues with it. I put bags on it, throw a sissy bar bag on it, and go wherever I feel like going.
Yeah, no, that's a great thought.
And it's reliable too. So there's people.
Absolutely.
People have this image that Harleys aren't reliable, but that's an old school thing. They have been for quite some time. So.
Right. Yeah, no, Harley, to me, a Harley is just as reliable as any other bike out there. And they have been for years.
Yeah, they've it's been a long time since it was the leaking in your garage kind of bike. It's solid now. We were talking about not following the trends, but when it comes to you setting your own trends, what's your philosophy right now? I'm sure it's different than it was 25 years ago on your ideas and your bikes.
The ideas in the bikes are pretty much the same. I mean, I'm to the point now to where I'm a little more particular about what I do and what work I'll take on. I mean, you know, we're a full-blown custom shop, but we do, you know, we'll do oil changes on your bike or tires or batteries and all that stuff. And all of that's cool and all that helps pay the bills. There was a guy in the other day, we were getting, or a couple months ago, we were getting ready to go to Sturgis. So I had I was hauling 6 bikes up there, and I had one of them out there, and the guy's just drooling over it. Well, he was carrying a tire that he bought on eBay for me to put on his Fat Boy. And so when he's sitting there and he's looking at the bike and just drooling over it, and he said, you know, he started talking about, man, this is the kind of stuff that's cool and all that. And I said, yeah. And he said something about my dream. And I said, yeah, building this crazy choppers like this, this is my dream. I said, putting eBay tires on Fat Boys, that ain't my dream. I didn't get into business and say, wait, hey, honey, I'm going to do a job. I'm going to get them tires, man. You know, that ain't my dream. And we do it every day. We do a ton of it. But, you know, that's just kind of part of the paying the dues kind of thing.
That's great. And I'm sure people appreciate it, too, because, you know, my local Harley dealers are great, but not everybody wants to take their bike to the Harley dealer every time. They like to, you know, work with a small business or something like that.
When you do, you're supporting the small business, and you're also, you know, you're most of the people that own Harley shops these days, they're awesome, but a lot of them are big companies. Yep. or they're big cats that own a bunch of dealerships, or guys that have car dealerships and all kind of things. Well, most of the small shops, and we're a pretty good sized shop for a custom shop. You know, I've got probably have 30 people that work here, and but it's, you know, we're a mom and pop deal. You know, it's me and my wife, my daughter, both my daughters are here. My sister runs my bar and grill for me. My IT guy that you were talking to is my brother-in-law. You know, I mean, we're a family business. And when somebody buys a tire on eBay and brings it into me, well, that hurts me. I mean, that's not, and I told the guy, I said, yeah, we're going to put it on there. But I said, you bring your eggs into Denny's and ask them to cook your breakfast for you? You know, you don't do that. Well, but in his defense, at this time, tires are hard to get because of the COVID and all that. So, and he said, Rick, I called up here. Y'all didn't have the tire in stock, I promise. And I said, well, then I promise you, I'm going to put it on your Fat Boy for you. We're going to do that.
That's awesome.
You know, but I'm big on supporting your local businesses.
And
if you don't support your local business, it's going to go away.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to go to the Harley shop, or you're going to have to, if you don't eat at the Greasy Spoon around the corner, you're going to have to only eat at Denny's. You know, if the small guys go away, just think how the country will look different. You know, it'll only be these big corporate stores, and God love Amazon. You know, I mean, they're awesome, but they are changing the way the world works. They're changing it, and this little box that me and you are talking into is changing it too. And these damn things are changing it. I mean, it's the world has changed so much. And it's like, I'm fixing to turn 65, and I think I'm an old man. I'm just out of touch with all this stuff. My brother-in-law has to do it, or one of my daughters has to show me how to work something. And it's like, I don't know that I want to know all that stuff.
You talk about things being different, but actually one of the things that I've noticed riding my bike across the country is what's different is that everything looks the same. You know, you ride through Dallas, and except for the neighborhood that you're in, you ride through Dallas and it's the strip mall sprawl. You ride through Alabama, it's a strip mall sprawl. It's the same stuff everywhere. It used to be, you know, maybe some of the small towns didn't have all this stuff, but each had its own little character in those lot of people that.
The personality is gone. And to me, that's what's wrong with the Harley shops is, you know, when we were younger and we would travel the country on our Harleys, we always stopped at all the Harley shops. I don't stop at the Harley shops anymore. I mean, they're big, beautiful stores like a Nordstrom's or a Macy's or, you know, a big department store. And, you know, it must be successful because they all do it, but it just, I don't know that the Harley shops used to be like Strokers is now. They used to be individual, and you could have your own personality in each store. But now you can't. I keep hearing a phone ringing. I don't know where the phone's coming from. I don't want the phone to ring. And it might be my cell phone. But that's the whole thing is support the small guys, support the small businesses, whether it's you or me or the Jimmy Nelson's hamburgers hut, you know. If those guys disappear, they ain't coming back.
So your big party that's coming up, we'll talk about that a little bit more.
Yep.
Your 65th birthday, the 25th anniversary of the shop.
Yep.
You got Warrant. There's a lot of other bands. And what else can we expect?
We will get, during that three-day weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, we'll have over 10,000 people come through the doors, and it'll be a zoo. But we'll do, Warrant obviously is a big thing. They're a multi-platinum recording group, and so they're the big thing. But we'll do, we do a bikini contest, and we'll do a wet t-shirt contest, and we have these other bands that are coming through. And, it's just going to be a weekend long celebration.
Awesome. Well, I lived in Dallas for 6 years, but it's been almost 10 years since I've been back. So I'm looking forward to it.
Have you been here before, Chris?
I have not been to your shop, which is, I don't really know why, because I used to visit Deep Ellum quite a bit. And
I ain't in Deep Ellum.
I thought you were in Deep Ellum.
No. You know where Love Field is?
Yeah.
I'm right there. I'm by Love Field.
Good, because that's where I'm flying in and where my hotel is.
Okay, so I'm right there.
I was going to actually ride, but then I just looked online, and it's actually cheaper for me to fly than it is to ride my motorcycle over there
right now. So you're flying Southwest?
Yeah.
Well, Southwest Airlines has helped keep me in business for 25 years. They just built a new, I'm on 2.5 acres here, right in the heart of Dallas, and from my automotive shop, my hot rod shop, Punchwally Garage, to the Southwest Airlines newest flight simulator building is about 200 yards.
Oh, cool.
We are right here in the heart of Southwest Airlines.
Awesome. Good. I could probably just walk there from the airport then.
Yeah, close.
So I'm going to Myrtle Beach Bike Week, and then I'm coming from there to Dallas. And actually, I thought I was going to have to come directly from South Carolina to Dallas. So I was like, I better look into flights. And for some reason, a flight in a hotel to Myrtle Beach and to Dallas right now is like $250. So, you know, even if I wanted to ride, it'd be kind of stupid because it cost me more than that in gas.
Right. Yeah.
So that's going to be a fun little trip.
So when are you coming down?
I'm going to come down on Friday and then stay till Monday, because I'm going to try to shoot as much stuff for my new TV show as possible. I'll do at least probably 2 episodes on you guys. And if I can get in touch with some other people like Gas Monkey Garage or something to see if they would be interested in doing some interviews, I might do some more along those lines. And I just want to do some stories about Texas and bikers, because Texas is just, I always have a place in my heart. I wasn't born there, but I spent between Dallas and Houston, I spent almost 9 years there. And
where were you born?
I was born in Muskegon, Michigan, but I only lived there for like 3 months.
And where do you live now?
I'm in Alabama near Mobile, but closer to the beach. So I grew up in Seattle, kind of. Then my parents moved us to Missouri. And then I've been all over the place for my TV career. One of the reasons I started doing this instead of TV news is because I was at the point where I was going to have to move again. And my kids love it here. And at least that's where all their friends are. And just figured I'd give this a shot, and you know, it's been working out, and it's even inspired my kids a little bit more, just to see, they see what I'm doing, and they're like, you can really do what you want and not work for, you know, some asshole in a suit. And it's working out
well. You can do what you want if you want to do it bad enough.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like losing weight or something like that. I mean, anybody can lose weight if you want to do it bad enough. Do you want to do it bad enough to give up this and that and all of that? Do you want to do it bad enough to get up early in the morning and work out? Do you want to do it bad enough to go walk, you know, 3 miles on your lunch break? Do you want to, you know, I mean, how bad do people want to do it?
That's a great point, because actually that was the first step in this for me. I lost 100 pounds about 3 years ago.
There you go.
Like, if I can do that, I can do this. I've been successful at everything I've ever tried. Right. Why would it be any different? And so
how old are you?
I am 46.
Okay. Okay.
It was,
and how old are your kids?
My oldest is about to turn 16. And then I have a 13-year-old and twins who are 11. So.
Ooh, that's that 13 and that 15-year-old. That's that, yeah. That starts the turbulent waters right there, buddy.
Well, my 15-year-old, this day of his 13th birthday, because he was the sweetest kid ever. On his 13th birthday, a switch went off, and he was an asshole for about 2.5 years. And he's coming around now. And part of the reason is this, because he's really interested in what I'm doing. Right. So he's kind of like interning for me. It's like, Dad, I need to start riding motorcycles so I can be on your show and so we can do this together. And so that is worth it right there. And my daughter wants to ride, so we're going to get them some dirt bikes pretty soon. And so hopefully we'll raise some people to ride motorcycles, because as we both know, and I'm in that same category, is that especially the Harley culture, the it's getting a little too old. We need to bring some young blood into it to keep it going. And that's,
does your wife work?
Yeah, she didn't work for like 14 years raising the kids, but she just started working as a pharmaceutical tech, just mainly so we'd have insurance and stuff like that.
Okay.
Good. And she wants to get out of the house, so.
Right.
But that's kind of worked out as part of the plan too.
Right. Good.
But the kids had her home for all that time, and now she's getting back out in the world a little bit.
That's good. That's good.
So, all right. Well, that's about all I had, unless there's something else you wanted to talk about that I didn't bring up.
No, I mean, anybody that's traveling through Dallas, or if people want to make, we get people all the time that make a special trip to Dallas just to visit us. You know, we'll send them like a list of hotels, and they'll hang out in Dallas, and they'll go see, you know, the Kennedy Museum and, yeah, you know, the different things in Dallas, Fort Worth that there is to see. And then they get to experience Strokers, which is, it's very unique. It's a different place. If your listeners will just, if they'll just Google my name, Rick Fairless, and it hit images, you'll see hundreds of pictures of motorcycles. And you can also Google Strokers Dallas or Strokers Ice House and hit images. And, you know, we've been here a long time, and we've been fortunate enough to do a lot of cool things. And there's still some other cool things. You know, my wife said one day, you know, you're turning 65 and my retirement money from Glidden will start coming in, which isn't much, but it's a little bit. And you get Medicare, I'm starting on Medicare. And, you know, do you ever think about selling the business or letting the girls take over? And it's like, okay, so I get up in the morning. Like right now, I come to work before 2 a.m. every day. Oh. Every day. I work every single day. The day, if I'm not working, I'm in Sturgis. You know, I go to Sturgis every year. Other than that, I'm at a rally or something, but I don't even do much of that anymore. But I thought, okay, if I'm not working, what am I doing? Sitting home watching Lifetime movies with my wife and holding hands? I'd rather work. I got nothing else. I got nothing that I would love to do. And one of the things I like to say is I'm lucky that what I do the best is what I love to do the most.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the whole reason I got into the motorcycle business, was the passion. And I wanted to work for myself, and I love motorcycles. So when I told my dad was a welder for years. And he opened his own sheet metal shop, and he did really good with it. And he used to tell my brother and I, you know, if you boys ever get the chance to work for yourself, you know, you should look into it. And then so when I decided I wanted to work for myself, I said, Dad, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna pull the trigger, and I'm gonna go to work for myself. And he said, attaboy, son, you're gonna open your own paint store. And I said, no, sir, Dad, I'm going to open a motorcycle shop. And he said, hold on, boy, hold on. He said, you make your living selling paint to contractors. motorcycles are just your hobby. And I said, I know, but I think I can do good at it. I think I can do it. And he said, well, if you want to do it, give it everything you have, just like the paint business, and you'll probably be successful. And, you know, that's what we did. Still doing it. And it's gotten no easier. You know, back during the 90s and the early 2000s, business was booming. I mean, we sold choppers like they're going out of style. Big Dog, American Iron Horse, Big Bear choppers. I mean, we sold hundreds and hundreds of them a year. And then 2008 came around and all that went out the window. And the problem that I see now that we face is most of the people that have made Harley flourish and that has made Harley the giant that it is are the baby boomers. Well, the baby boomers are aging out like me. And, you know, we sell bikes on consignment up here. And so every week we get guys that are my age or even older, some younger, that come in and, well, you know, I don't ride much anymore. Or, well, my knees are shot. Well, my back shot. Well, my buddies don't ride. And, you know, they're giving up riding. The younger people your age and even younger, most of them aren't, you know, they were raised like your kids. They're raised on these things, and they're raised on the computers. Like when you were raised, you're how old, 45, 46?
46, yeah.
Then I would say you're like me. When we were raised, you were outside all the time. You were either, like with my brother and I, we were either playing football, baseball, basketball, riding a skateboard. We had bicycles. We rode them bicycles for miles to go fishing or hang out with our buddies. And the only time we were ever in the house is if we were grounded. If you're eating or sleeping or grounded, it for you to be in the house was a punishment. Well, now you can't get the kids out of the house. I mean, you don't see many kids in the neighborhood out riding bicycles. When we were kids, you could tell where all the kids were, look for all the bicycles in the yard, and the kids are going to be in the backyard or in the street or fishing hole or something. So the kids these days, they didn't grow up worshiping the motorcycle or the Harley like we did. And the ones that do want to ride, say they're 25 or 30 years old and they want to ride a motorcycle, they don't want a Harley. It's what all the old men ride.
Yeah.
You know, and just things have changed so much. You know, they've just changed so much. And it's good in that, like what we were talking about, where how dependable the Harleys are. I mean, they're unbelievably good bikes, but.
And Harley's going to have to stop worrying too much about what us older people think anyway. Like these.
Well, they are.
The last two bikes that they came up with, the Pan America and this new Sportster, young people are excited about, and they can't keep, they don't even hit the showroom floor. They're gone before they even get there. And so hopefully there's a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel for that kind of thing.
I hope so.
I get a little tired of being the baby at everything, and I'm not young. We already talked about I was 46. We need to bring more young people into this whole thing and encourage them and inspire them to do it. And that's why I'm happy.
If you can just get them on a motorcycle or kind of get them started on that, I think they'd like it. You know, there's a program called All Kids Bikes, which is a Strider, and Lena and I are part of that program. And like her kids both have Striders. We started them on that when they were 1 year old, and now they both have motorcycles. They both have Yamaha 50s. Pearl is 4 years old, so she's got training wheels on hers, but she's about ready to pull them off. And she actually rides the same Yamaha 50 that I bought for her mother 30-something years ago.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's, well, the YZ50, I think, is the first bike I ever put my butt on. And
that's what she rides, a YZ50, and he rides his is a newer, it's a couple of year old Yamaha 50 that he rides, and they love it. They love it, but you got to get them on it. You got to go through that process of teaching them how to ride. And once you do, they come up here because we got the 2.5 acres. I can't keep them off that motorcycle. They want to ride all the time, which is fine with me.
Awesome. Well, there's hope right there. So we're raising a couple of groups of kids who are going to grow up.
Get your kids on a motorcycle, Chris.
Yeah.
Get them on it.
Well, we're doing that soon. I think the pressure on my wife has gotten too strong for her not to let me do it. So, and like you were talking about, I was a kid in the 80s. We wanted to have the coolest bike, BMX bike when we were a certain age. And then when we got 10 or 11, 12, it was like all about trading up to a dirt bike. And how most of us who ride these days got started doing wheelies on our YZs and my Hadaka dirt squirt that I had. And then, you know, unfortunately for me, because this is probably why I haven't been to your shop before, for about 20 years I wasn't on a motorcycle for like 20 years, and I went to Houston for work, and just like here it was stressful and it sucked, and my office was a block from the Harley dealer and I had to drive past it every day. And one day I just stopped in there and test rode a Sportster, and I came home from work with a smile on my face, and my wife was like, "What in the heck is wrong with you?" And I was like, "What do you mean?" She said, "You're smiling." So yeah, I just rode a Harley the first time I rode a bike in like 20 years. She goes, "Go back down there right now and buy it." And so that started me on this road. And so that was nice of her to say that.
Just don't, you have to have the resolve to, or anybody does that's thinking about doing their own thing. Don't be easily knocked off track. You know, if you have your mind that you want to do something, man, do it all the way as hard as you can, and you'll be successful at it, you know. And I've always said that even if you make less money doing it, if you enjoy it, it's worth it. It's worth it, you know.
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't have to make a ton of money here. If I make enough money to keep my wife happy, I'm fine. You know, I've got all kinds of project bikes that I build for myself and we're working on for myself and doing that. If I didn't have that, I'd go crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got all kinds of, one day my wife was back in the very back warehouse where she never comes. She was looking for me. And she came back there and I got like, I don't know, 20 bikes back there that have sheets over them and all that. And she said, "What are all those bikes?" And I said, "All of those are my project bikes. You know, they're bikes in various stages that I bought or started or whatever that I'm gonna, you know, that I'm gonna complete. They're my project bikes." And she said, "All of those are your project bikes?" And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "You're 63. I don't think you're gonna make it to get all of them done." But every year I try to go through a couple of them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I live for that stuff. I live to do the custom stuff. You know, that's what's cool to me.
Yeah, I totally get it. I live to ride motorcycles and tell stories. And so I'm able to do that now. So, all right, we'll wrap it up. Thank you for joining us, Rick Fairless from Dallas. And we'll see you this is airing on Sunday. So we'll see you in a little bit less than a week. And I'm excited to meet you and see the shop and party a little bit.
Yep. No, I'll give you a big tour of the place. And I promise you, it's very eclectic.
Oh, yeah.
And it'd be like no place you've ever seen before.
Awesome. Looking forward to it.
All right, pal.
Thank you very much.